And the same thing we say about Tom Cruise, you could say about Will Smith. And I don't know, I don't want to get in trouble here, because these guys look amazing, do they not? I mean, like...
Oh, yeah.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Welcome to episode 86, Ted. Here we go again. We got a few trailers, some beer. How was your week? The whole nine.
There we go.
Yeah, let's start with beers, maybe. What do you say?
You beat me to the punch because I definitely need to start with beers.
Nice. Was it a long week? Is that why?
No. You didn't see my beer.
No, I didn't. The heck is that thing?
It's a crowler.
It's enormous. I had one of those once.
It's a 32 ounce, one quart crowler from Simsy's. I went to Simsy's for lunch today. It's like a beach restaurant. And we have one in Burbank, and they just got themselves a crowler canning machine. So they're very happy to can up some of their goodness here.
They're very happy to do it, huh? Ted, 32 ounces. This is like a slightly longer than an hour show. I mean, what are you going to do with this thing?
Let's see if I can do it.
Okay.
All right. I'll crack it and then we'll talk a little bit about it and all that stuff. So.
Oh, yeah, man. That's a crawler crack.
This was just canned today from the tap.
Oh, cool.
And it is called Tips Up IPA.
And it's from where again?
It's from Simsy's. So in Burbank, there's a brewery.
Burbank. Okay. I guess I was more about the town.
Yeah. So in Burbank, about a half mile from my office, my wife and her friend, Carrie, were having lunch and they were like, come to lunch. And I was like, how am I going to get there? We carpooled today. I don't have my keys on me, you know, for the car. So I said, they're like, take a Lyft. So I went down to the lobby and I was like, oh, the Lyft app like deleted itself off my phone. So I was like, oh, it's only half mile. So I said, I'll start to walk. And then by the time the Lyft app loads, I'll take the Lyft from there. Well, it took the whole walk to load. So I walked half a mile.
You got in your steps.
I got in my steps. Not too bad. But I was ready for a beer when I got there. And so I did not have this beer. I had two other beers for lunch. I had the Alpine Nelson IPA and the Trustworthy Brass Jar Hoppy Amber Ale. So those were with my lunch. And then
guy drinking beers at lunch.
And then I went with Tips Up IPA, which is a 6.9 incredibly hoppy IPA that they brew right there.
And that's what you have right here.
That's what I have here. It's a nice, crisp, clean, clear. They did not know the IBUs, but I will tell you it's on the higher end.
What's the ABV?
The ABV is 6.9.
6.9, you said that.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll just read the little blurb for it. It says, our flagship IPA bursts with flavors and aromas of tropical fruit, citrus, and a touch of coconut. And yes, all of this is true.
Nice. Touch of coconut. I wonder what they do for coconut. What kind of hop makes a coconut?
I think they just put a little tanning lotion in there and then...
Yeah. So they're like the little dogs pulling down your pants off your butt, like the old billboard.
The copper tone.
Okay, yeah.
What do you have tonight?
Yeah. So this week, it's that time of year again. I have an Oktoberfest.
Oh, nice.
Well, it's a Sierra Nevada 2019 Oktoberfest, and it's in a collaboration with Bitburger Brewery.
Ooh.
That's out of Germany, and it's apparently the number three best-selling beer in Germany or something, or the number three best-selling brewery in Germany, Bitburger.
Mm.
And so I saw this in the store, and I thought, you know, hey, it's always good to have an Oktoberfest this time of year. We're coming up to, well, October.
I love how the Oktoberfest come out in September, and like the true Oktoberfest is like at the end of September.
Yeah. Yeah, and we have 6.0 ABV. A little bit away from the mic there, but it's 6.0 ABV.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it looks good. I'm letting the head go down a little bit. So let's see how this sucker tastes. Ooh, a little malty.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they nailed it. I mean, it's not one of those like high hopped kind of IPA type things. It's very mild, malty.
You want something smooth with the Oktoberfest, right?
Yeah, it's really smooth, not too bitter. Has a little bit of a sweetness to it. Finishes super clean. It's almost like walnut notes of flavor in there, like walnut, maybe almond, something like it's a little bit nutty. Oh, wow. Very good. Very good.
That sounds great.
All right. Yeah, it is. So you have a lot of beer to get going on. So maybe I'll be doing more talking okay. this week and you're doing more drinking. I don't know.
But. Right at the end, I'll just be passed out over here and you can just finish the show by yourself.
I'll just say, and Ted, you know, we'll just hear a big thud. Ba-dum-p. I'm like, well, there goes Ted. So short week since our past recording, and we had a short week at work with Labor Day and all that stuff. So with all that said, how was your week?
So the week was packed. It was amazing. Like work week is normal. I was getting through some stuff, starting a couple new projects. But in the evenings, you know, you expect to come home and, you know, be with the family and get a good dinner in and stuff like that. But we were going every day this week. We had something going on. We had back to school nights. We had various sporting events for the kids that are starting up. I had coffee with a principal for over an hour with a bunch of parents in the morning on Wednesday of this week. So I was late to work that morning. It was my boss's birthday. Happy birthday. So I walked into her birthday donuts. And I was like, oh no donuts. I can't eat donuts. So I tried to stay away from the donuts this week. And then tonight we had a triple bill. So I had to leave work a little bit early so we could go to my Bryce's. He had like a picnic at school after school this Friday evening. So we went straight to his school for the Friday picnic. And then from the Friday picnic, we rushed home so I could go to the church, my church, for our media and marketing ministry meeting. So that was the last hour and a half we were doing that, trying to figure out. I guess I got put in charge of redoing our website. And then this whole week, I've been pushing really hard trying to learn about, you know, SEO and marketing and building a community on Bitcast. So I've been balls to the wall, busy in my laptops, working nonstop from the time I open my eyes in the morning to the time I close them.
So not watching much, it sounds like.
I did watch two things.
All right, well, hold that. We'll get it to the end.
We'll hold the two things at the end when we do what we're watching, but yeah.
There you go. You know, I always find short work weeks to be like more stressful because like your workload doesn't go down.
Right.
Your deadlines are still the same day, but you just have one less day to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it all gets crammed into 4 days instead of like trying to spread it out over 5 days. So like it's much less relaxing when you're trying to like get your work schedule going and everything.
Yeah.
Personal life though, not a lot going on this week. You know, again, it was a short week since we recorded last, but tomorrow I'm helping to assist Santa Barbara Bike Coalition gentleman who is a League of American Bicycle instructor. And I'm going to be like his little assistant, you know, for a Confidence City cycling class here in town.
Mm.
And again, that's put on by the Santa Barbara Bike Coalition. But by the time this comes out, the event will have already happened. And I think it's already a full class that they're going to have. It sounds like they do a bit of a, like, I don't know. I hate to say classroom because it's not really classroom, but they talk about like laws and they have like ways of being safe on the bike. And then you go out for a ride, you know, for like say 4 miles. And then there's like left turns and right turns. And they help like people who aren't really confident riding bikes around town.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, to get a little bit more confident and stuff. So I'm going to be kind of pulling up the rear and helping people. And there's like a little bit of a mechanic part of it, you know, that I'll probably help with, like, here's how to change a flat tire, you know, all that stuff. So that'll be fun, you know, and Clarissa and the boys are going to be going there. And so we're all going to kind of ride this thing with the cargo bike. And
oh, cool.
Yeah. And I think some of it is like they want, because, you know, they know we have like cargo bikes and stuff. And they're like, well, you know, you guys can show people that biking could be a daily thing for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, so
what were you hauling around in that bike this week? Or was it this week? You had like windows or something in there?
I had windows.
I looked on Instagram. I pulled a picture to put when you were talking about the Urban Arrow. I made a bunch of bitclast.fm clips and I put a link to your Instagram where it has Timmy and Mikey in there with like these huge squares or something.
Oh, Oh, that was because last week we talked about the flooring.
Oh, that's the flooring?
The rubber flooring, the interlocking flooring for the home gym. And yeah, that was because they're like, what are they, like 25 by 25 inch squares or something? So like they're like buried in this home flooring in the Urban Arrow. Yeah, yeah. That was a couple weeks ago.
That was hilarious. You couldn't pull the car out to go get the flooring?
Oh, no, man, I got to do it. And so we're riding back and like the guys, you know, the boys are just buried in this stuff, you know, and then like I'm riding home and people are looking and they're always like, what is that? You know, and like everybody wants to know what you're doing. And it's like, I don't know, like we're like famous in town with this bike now, you know,
it's like a pickup truck, except it's in the front of you and it's a bike.
Yeah. And I think the best thing, yeah, it's almost like a bike Camino.
Bike Camino.
But I think the best thing I ever carried was a couple of fruit trees in the thing. You know, I'm riding down the road and these trees are blowing in the wind. You know, and they were, I don't know what they were like. Well, they probably weren't that big. I mean, maybe 5-ish feet tall or something when they were all in there, you know? And
yeah.
They weren't, like I said, they weren't real tall, but I mean, I'm like, how am I going to get these trees home? I'm thinking about taking a car and I'm like, I can't get trees in a car. I'm like, I know, I'm just putting them in front of the bike. So Ted.
Yes, sir.
Are you a bad boy?
Bad boys. What you gonna do?
Yeah, you a bad boy for life?
I'm a bad boy for life. I was.
Yeah, or are you more of like a naughty boy?
No, I'm a bad boy. I swear, I loved this movie when it came out, the first one. Yes, so this was quite the emotional trailer for me to see.
Oh, so you have like emotional ties to this from your youth.
Oh, it is a quintessential growing up kind of movie. You know, I often talk about when I'm going to show Bryce the movies of, you know, that I grew up with, that I learned to love about filmmaking and things like that. And I have never put Bad Boys in that realm, in that conversation. You know, it's always been Goodfellas or like Silence of the Lambs. It's the movies that are ultra violent, but have this cinematic quality to it.
Right.
But I think Bad Boys, the original Bad Boys, now that I see this and now I have this recall to this space, I'm thinking this might be one of the first ones that he could kind of get into. It has, you know, it has some sex and some drugs in it, but I don't think it has the level of sex and drugs. It's kind of like it's an ancillary thing. It's not really focused on. It's not a big part of the story, but it has a level of just cinematic violence and like this cinematic thing that is so 90s, that it's quintessential 90s flair to it, that, you know, it's an amazing thing.
Probably more language than anything.
Yeah, probably. And in the language, I don't mind. It's more about the drugs, the killing, and a little bit of objectifying women. There's a couple of club scenes, you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But I think in the scheme of the three movies that I mentioned, Goodfellas, Silence of the Lambs, and Bad Boys, I think, you know, we're talking probably 13 years old, you can see Bad Boys. I'll have to sell that to Anne. We'll see.
Right. I mean, obviously it's an action flick, but I mean, so police in, say, a 30-year career might discharge their weapon once.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, these guys are in shootout after shootout with, you know, big weapons and, I mean, just crazy town. And it's like only them.
Were you a fan of the first one?
Oh, I mean, it was okay.
Okay.
I don't know if I was so like enamored with it the way you're making it out to be for yourself. Uh-huh. I think where I was at the time, like, yeah, I watched it and it was fun and, you know, just you move on. And but I don't know. I felt like as I don't even know, like what would I have been, like maybe later 20s or mid 20s when the first one came out?
1995.
95. Okay. So I would have been, what is that? I would have been 20. Four, I guess.
Okay.
When it came out. So yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it, you know, but watching this trailer, I felt old. Right? I felt like, wow, I know it's coming out and I liked the other one or the first one, and it was, you know, it had all the stuff you were talking about, you know, and sometimes those movies hold up and sometimes they don't. And what I like to do most often is leave 90s movies in the 90s. Because there's been times where I'm like, this movie was the greatest. And then you watch it. And then the person that you're watching it with, who you convinced to go to sit and watch it with you, you just kind of look over about 35 minutes in. You're like, sorry, dude. my recollection was it was way better, you know? So,
yeah.
And I probably haven't seen it since 95. So I couldn't even tell you how it holds up or anything. And I mean, don't get me wrong. If you're just out for like a fun explosion movie with like lots of gunplay and I mean, the comedic relief of it in the scenes, I mean, the jokes seem funny, but they also seem predictable. I don't know how I feel about it. I think I'd have to see it. I think the trailer gives you what you expect it to be. You know, it's just, it's an action flick, cops, gunplay, bringing back bad boys. It seems like they're going to be in the twilight of their career.
Yeah.
You know, the way the movie's playing out or the trailer's playing out. I don't know. I think it'll be fun to watch, but I don't think there's any surprises. I think it's going to be what you would expect it to be.
Predictable. It's going to deliver what it delivers.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, we talked when we covered Top Gun Maverick, you know, that's another one where it's what, about 10 years earlier, with 1986 being the first Top Gun movie.
Right.
But it's a very similar kind of story where we're taking a character and we're jumping forward to the twilight of their career and then revisiting this character. So it has this recall. And the same thing we say about Tom Cruise, you could say about Will Smith. And I don't know, I don't want to get in trouble here, but maybe Scientology has some secrets, because these guys look amazing, do they not? I mean, like,
oh yeah, Will Smith is a Scientologist?
He's one of the quiet ones. I don't think he says he's a Scientologist, but I think he pals around with Scientologists. I have nothing against Scientology. I'll just put that out there, because I live and work in Los Angeles, and more power to you. I, you know, if you find something that you can, that makes you a better person, then all more power to you. But I will say that Martin Lawrence, like, he does, I thought he does a pretty decent job of holding it together, because you would expect Martin Lawrence or that, you know, that type of person or that character to have fallen apart. I mean, he must have really worked out to get himself back in shape to pull this off.
I'll tell you though, you can see like in Will Smith, especially, I mean, you can see like he's heavier, he's bigger, mm-hmm. You know, he's not as skinny as he was, you know, in, you know, 90s TV shows and all the stuff or movies that he was in,
right?
But man, these guys look like anti-aging cream is doing amazing work. I mean, you know, serious.
Yeah,
you're right.
I mean,
about
25 that. 30 years ago, right? I mean, that's what we're talking about. It's amazing.
I mean, maybe it goes back to what they say, like black don't crack. But yeah, no, they do look great. Like I said, you know, a little bit heavier, I think.
Right.
You know, I think it was, I forget which movie, where Will Smith was doing,
Gemini Man, right?
No, what's the I Am Legend?
Oh, I Am Legend, yeah.
I Am Legend. He's doing like the behind the head pull-ups and he's like totally just ripped and you're like, wow, that guy looks good, you know? Like.
Yeah, but even I Am Legend, that was a long time ago.
Well, for sure, yeah. I'm just saying, like, he was ripped. He was, like, super skinny, like a scrawny guy.
Yeah.
And then he was, like, all ripped and everything. And now he's a little bit heavier, I think. You know, you can see, like, in his arms and stuff. But, I mean, he still looks, like, super young. And, yeah, I mean, like, I don't know how old he is. He's got to be, what, pushing, like, late 40s or something?
Oh, at least, right? I mean, he's got to be our age or a little bit older.
Let's take a look. Will Smith.
Do you think the internet will tell you?
Born in 68.
68. So a little bit older than us. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's 51.
Yeah. 51 years old. And that's what he looks like.
Yeah. 51. I hope I look that good when I'm 51. Yeah. Wow, that's incredible.
So we have a trailer to the trailer at the top, right?
Yeah, it's quick.
It's okay. It's okay. It's you know, it sets the mood. But that opening shot, the glamour shot of the Porsche, you know, panning around.
Right.
The, you know, him coming out of the car. It's like the quintessential Michael Bay shot. We, you know, I shot a movie in 2005 with my friend. We went to Wisconsin to shoot it. And we set up this circular track around our two lead actors. And when we set up the circular track, we had the camera go, you know, do this dolly move around the track. And we had the two actors stand up in the center of this, of the track. And we kind of panned up with them as we're coming around the circular track for this monumentous moment at the end of the movie. Climactic scene, right? And the director and I are like, you know, super excited about this shot. And I look over to Doug. I was like, Doug, how's it look? How's it look at the monitor? And he's like, this is my Michael Bay shot. It's perfect. It's everything I imagined it would be. It was hilarious. And it's just that low angle pan, the dolly around and then the pan up. And then to have it disrupted by Martin Lawrence with him hitting the fire hydrant. It's just everybody falls back into place. And like you said, everything's as expected, but comfortingly so.
That's exactly my point. Like, it's the movie that you expect to see when you pay your $12 or whatever, when you plunk it down at the theater and you say, one for Bad Boys for Life, please. And then you walk in and it's going to be the movie you expect. So, but I'm assuming at some point, and maybe not in the theater, but you're definitely going to see this.
Yes.
Okay.
I might sneak off for a Tuesday long lunch.
Gotcha. For the $5 one.
Yes.
And the question I think everybody...
Oh, AMC jumped to $6 now. They're $6.
Oh, those $6. But I think the question everybody right now is asking, where can we see your movie? How do we see it?
You could buy it on Amazon.
No.
Yeah, you can.
What's the name of it?
I don't know. It's been changed. The name has been changed a number of times. It's called Afterthought.
Afterthought?
Let me make sure that's still the name of it. There it is. No, now it's called Aberration.
Wait, who's changing the name?
The company that bought it. So a company bought it in 2007. Doug and I made it. Doug, Wendy, his wife, and I made it in 2005. Anne was pregnant with Audrey at the time, so I sent her home to D.C. We were going to shoot it over the month of October in Wisconsin. Wendy's from Wisconsin. We went up to Appleton and Wapaka, Wisconsin. Have you seen Frank wear his Wapaka Fire Department t-shirt?
Yeah.
I bought him that shirt when we were over there. It was amazing. And then I have Ice Dogs t-shirts. So we had an ice rink that we rented out. Basically, they gave us so much stuff for free because they were so happy, like a Hollywood crew was here. You know, we had about $100,000 to shoot this movie. And Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
Gave us their hospital. They were like, we have a whole wing of a hospital. But we don't use. You can use the whole thing. So we use the hospital for like the hospital scenes. They had a brand new penitentiary that they didn't use. So I was in Master Control, like opening and closing these jail cells in Master Control. So it was like a real jail that we used for the jail cell scenes, you know?
That's amazing. So send a link over because I...
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I don't even... I'm trying to find it. I can't find it.
All right. So yeah, it's on IMDb under Aberration, 2007, and it has a couple of featurette videos in there too, so I'll send the links of that in there too. It has me operating on 23 hours awake, 1 hour of sleep a night for 3 weeks.
Wait, say that again?
For three weeks. It's called a Down and Dirty 18. So 18 days of shooting, which is about 3 weeks, and then because it's 6 days on, 1 day off, and then for that whole time, Doug and I were working 23 hours a day.
Wow.
And the crew was working, you know, the crew was working like 14, 16 hour days. The cast was working 12 hour days. And I was misquoted in the paper. Basically, the paper quoted me as saying I was working hard with, you know, Doug and I were working harder than everybody else. But I was like, no, we were just putting in a lot more hours because we were, you know, we had to like, you know, do new shot lists and stuff because we weren't getting through all the stuff we needed to and had to, you know, make all nice with the whole crew. And yeah, there was tons of stuff that went on over that course of the month of October.
Wow, that's really cool. You still have to send me a link because I can't find this.
Okay,
thing,
cool. Man. I'll send you a link.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's not as famous. It's not as popular. Yeah. So how long was the filming of it? Like how long did it take?
So it took, yeah, that 18 days. So 3 weeks.
So an 18 day movie. That's it.
The month of October. Yeah. That's all the money we had. We didn't have more money to do anything more than that.
And how long, like what's the length of it?
It's like an 85 minute movie.
Okay. And then so a month. And what was the budget?
We had under $100,000.
Okay. And who funded this thing?
Just people that they knew. They, you know, he was here in LA. We were both here in LA. We were working at AFI, American Film Institute, together. We're just like doing odd jobs around AFI. And he was shooting like music videos on the weekend, and we'd shoot like shorts, and, you know, we'd do like, he'd get $3,000 and like shoot a movie, and, you know, we just pay people in pizza and stuff. And then his, Wendy, his wife, wrote this feature, a horror film, you know, college slasher, high school horror flick. And she said, oh, you know, I kind of wrote it with my hometown in mind. We could go back to my hometown and shoot it. They got an AFI producer involved, and she was supposed to be scheduled to produce it. And they had it all packaged up, and they were raising money for it. But she wanted to raise $250,000. She wanted $250,000. And he had raised almost $100,000. And he was like, no, 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 I've made movies for $3,000. We can do this for $100,000. She said, no, she wouldn't do it for any less than $250,000. He was like, I don't think we're going to bridge this gap. It's a huge gap, you know? So they parted ways, and he said, we'll just hire you for a month for a flat fee to produce this and kind of line produce it and do all this. And I said, all right, well, Anne's pregnant. I'll send her to DC. But I landed in town, and they were like, all right, we rented out this whole hotel, the whole motel. We rented all the rooms there, and we don't have as much money as we thought we did. We're a couple of like 10 grand short, you know? So I looked at all the books, and I was like, all right, we're firing all the catering, firing all the craft services. We're going to bunk people in the rooms. We're going to get rid of half of the rooms. So I cut like 10 grand the day one that I was there. And I put Anne on a plane. I said, Anne, get out here. 5 months pregnant, you're going to run all the craft services and all the meals.
That's amazing.
For free.
So this is the one with the kid with the dark eyes?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, yeah, I could get it right now on Amazon Prime for $4.99 HD.
There you go, sweet. Buy it, thank you.
Man.
I get none of that. I get no back end because it's already, you know.
I know, IMDb gives it 2.9.
There you go, out of 10?
Out of 10. Yeah.
Yay.
Man, amazing. So you're like on IMDb and stuff. So.
Does it have, it has me there, right? Did you click on me?
Wow. So this was right out of film school?
Yeah. So 2004, I graduated film school. I moved out here and then taking odd jobs and things like that. So a year after I moved to LA, I did this.
Wow. That's pretty cool. So did you think you were going somewhere and then it didn't pan out or something or what?
Well, you know, I wanted more of a...
You know, I mean, I'm serious with the question, though. Did you think like, wow, this is... Like, I actually got into a movie and stuff, or...
Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of work. It was not something that I could sustain. You know, I couldn't sustain the hustle of finding another gig and like living that life of like going out and shooting a movie. You know, I think it was too much of a hustle and a grind the way that we did that at that low budget. Like I didn't see, you know, like the one day shoots that I cover now that I produce now are more expensive than this whole movie production, you know?
Right, I mean? Right.
Like, I'll spend $125,000 on a shoot that's one day, you know? And every time I pull that budget together and I see that budget come across from these vendors, I'm like, God, we could shoot a whole movie over 3 weeks for this, you know?
Yeah, wow. And then you're sitting there like adjusting for inflation. You know, well, that's cool, man. I mean, hey, you have one more movie than I have, you know.
Exactly.
So that's pretty exciting. That's, yeah, we could talk more about that another day. So overall, like you said, you're gonna see Bad Boys for Life.
I'm gonna see Bad Boys for Life.
Yeah, I may or may not. This would be definitely a streamer for me.
Uh-huh.
Like I said, it's going to give me what I want to see, what I expect to see.
I think when I go see this movie, though, I will print a picture of Taya Leone.
Okay.
And cut her out so that I can have her like in this movie, because I feel like she's not going to be in this movie at all.
Ah.
And I miss her. I miss her so much. I want her in this movie.
Okay. Oh, so you don't think it's going to be like a cameo? At least
a cameo. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah, just to like say, you know, pay homage to the old movie and be like, all right, now be off with yourself.
Right.
All right, so let's do some laundry at the laundromat.
Oh yes.
Yeah, it definitely has an Ocean's 11 feel. I mean, seeing as,
oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, I do love that this is going to be on Netflix.
because you can see it.
Yeah, it's like released, what, September 20th, I think?
It's coming right around the corner.
Yeah, week and a half, all of a sudden, bam, there it is, I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
Like, how do you not?
And then it's in your face. It's opulent. It has that Soderbergh, you know, that Soderbergh flair to it. At first I thought like I was going to miss the Ocean's 11 cast, you know, the Brad Pitt, the Clooney, the, you know, Matt Damon. But then I watched the trailer again and I'm like, no, this has all the feel.
But it's a different movie though.
Yeah. But sometimes they reuse those characters. Sometimes they reuse the actors. But it has the lightness. It has the feel and the vibe of a Soderbergh film that it doesn't need it. I think it's going to be great with the cast that he's assembled. You know, I mean, yeah, it's going to be amazing.
Yeah. And not the flow of the movie, because I mean, the trailer kind of gives it that flow of an Ocean's 11. Like you're expecting that tempo.
Uh-huh.
But the story with the fictional, like, yeah, there's hints of truth, hints of conspiracy, possibly could have happened, but like none of it's true, but all of it's true at some point in history. And they kind of put this fictional piece together, you know. But what it reminds me of in a way with that same kind of a feel as far as the story is Lord of War.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
You have Gunrunner, you have Weapons Trader, you have all this stuff that this guy who was, you know, the Nick Cage character was doing in Lord of War.
Yes.
And guaranteed that maybe not that guy, but those stories have, you know, happened throughout the course of history with arms deals and the whole nine. And I could totally see like that conspiracy playing out across the world in various scenarios. And I can totally see this story playing out with like whatever bank deals and money laundering and
yeah,
and the cash changing, well, maybe not even cash, but just like credits in banks changing hands. And
I mean, yeah, I expect to see a couple of scenes where they show a computer screen and a bank account number and the number just going down. And it's just going to be so amazingly exciting because the person that is watching it, you're going to want them to lose all their money. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think too, it's like the underlying conspiracy that the wealthy are wealthy because they're just stealing everybody's money.
And then for somebody to steal it back because they were wronged by this, you know?
Yeah.
It's the ultimate underdog story. And on top of it, you know, Gary Oldman, this trailer does not have a trailer to trailer, but it has our new favorite, the direct to, you know, breaking the fourth wall. And when Gary Oldman talks to you, he's like, the first thing you must ask yourself is, are you wealthy? You know what I mean? And it's like, it's that disarming factor. And Antonio Banderas and Gary Oldman are like Siegfried and Roy. And they're just like the...
And it grabs you right away.
It grabs you and they're in a club. And did you not get the Siegfried and Roy feel from those two?
I did a little bit. I mean, minus the tiger. But no, I totally had the feel like, you know, they're these flamboyant, what are they, attorneys or something?
They're flamboyant attorney accountant billionaires, right? I
mean. That are just like shuffling money back and forth. And I love the final scene then where they're like, where's my money? And they're like, well, we don't know. Like, or whatever he says. But it's great though. And Meryl Streep is the everyman who's just saying, no, you guys aren't doing what's right. I want my money back.
And if you're not going to give it to me, I'm going to orchestrate the most elaborate, you know, scheme to, you know, grift all of you grifters, you know?
And that's the scheme I want to see. What does she put together? And you know, it's going to be one of those fast jump cutty
multi-plane where they show different segments of the screen doing different things. Yeah.
Yeah. And as she's putting the scheme together, she'll have her little worker bees, like you said, the multi-plane, like, you know, the one person's going to be over at the ATM and then somebody's going to be over there like putting in like the bad credit card or whatever, right? You know, it's going to be, yeah. Oh no, I think it's going to be brilliant.
And we're going to need an acrobat.
Right, right. The other thing I like about these movies is they have such a star-studded cast, especially with this one that's going to be so, I mean, the barrier to entry is so low on Netflix.
Right.
It's one of those movies, you know, and again, is it that they're checking the box the boxes based on data, or are they just letting this guy have free reign to make a movie?
Well, I mean, Soderbergh makes so much content, right? I mean, like he made the last movie on an iPhone in an insane asylum with Claire DeFoy, you know what I mean? It was like, it was super ultra low budget, and now he makes this, you know, huge blockbuster movie with these A-list Hollywood talent, you know, who knows the budget, $100 million budget for this movie, I'm just guessing. And then Netflix puts it out, they release this trailer August 28th, and less than a month later it's going to be on their streaming service ready for view.
Yeah, I mean, the guy puts out just a ton of movies, you know, and he does all the Oceans and all this stuff. I mean, the guy's incredible. I mean, you know, and I like his style. I mean, it's a fun style. It's a fast moving style. You don't get tired while you're watching it. Like, you know, there's no long drawn out scenes that just like, you know, one of those things where like all of a sudden you doze off for a second and you're like, whoa, I got to wake back up.
Yeah, I think he has multifaceted taste. Like he has a palette of styles that he uses. So when you watch like a Paul Thomas Anderson movie, you know, it's Paul Thomas Anderson.
Right.
But with Soderbergh, you know, the difference between Unsane and, you know, Ocean's 11 is night and day, you know, like, and the difference between Prêt-à-Porter or whatever, one of his like other movies where it's experimental, and Traffic is another night and day kind of thing. So he has a full palette of styles that he uses, but this definitely falls into a palette of the Ocean's 11 palette. And then the Netflix marketing team knows that this falls into that style. So then they promote the legacy cards to that power, to that strength of what Soderbergh is doing. You know, they don't say from the director of Unsane, because it's a completely different movie than that movie. But Ocean's 11 does sell it, and we have an idea of the way that he's going to play it and the way that he's going to stylize the movie. So I think that's an interesting thing where the marketing team and the creative team are kind of in step.
Yeah, no, I mean, it looks a lot of fun, and I'm assuming you're going to see this one.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to get rid of Netflix until, what is it, November 12th, right?
And you won't need it ever again. So when you look at a style of directing, you know, like, so what Soderbergh does in a lot of his movies with fast jump cuts and short scenes and,
yeah,
and you could say like the Bourne movies are very similar in that regard. Kind of, what's your style of directing that you tend to like gravitate toward most?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think for me, it's all about the storytelling. If you have a grasp of this deep storytelling, Quentin Tarantino and Paul Thomas Anderson, I guess there, and Wes Anderson. Those are like the top auteur directors that I like, you know, and I think Jordan Peele's coming into that realm.
For sure, yeah.
But he's still developing, you know, his couple movies under his belt. But yes, I think somebody who has a command of their voice, and I think Soderbergh does too, but I love his variation of styles. I don't know. I think Paul Thomas Anderson's probably my favorite, and his is just about a character study and just the complete command of putting actors in situations that demand them to step up every ounce of their acting ability. So I mean, he digs so deep into these actors that there's nothing left after that. You know, it is the pinnacle of whatever work that they've done. I mean, I would say Adam Sandler, Daniel Day-Lewis, Philip C. Hoffman, and possibly Joaquin Phoenix have given their best performances to Paul Thomas Anderson.
Oh, wow. That's bold. Yeah. No, I mean, I couldn't disagree with that at all. And I think I agree with you too. I mean, when you look at like a Soderbergh type or a Michael Bay type movie or something,
yeah,
they're just too fast, I think, for me to keep up with. And like, I miss way too much in movies like that.
Yeah.
You know, like with the jump cuts and just the fast action and all the stuff that's going on. But like when you talk about a Quentin Tarantino or somebody, it goes at a slow pace. He might just be doing a whole scene with a single camera or maybe two cameras. cameras.
Yeah.
And he's not doing a lot of jumping, but with the camera movements, he's getting everybody, like in Reservoir Dogs, as an example, the diner scene when they're just sitting there having a conversation. That just, the dialogue is so amazing, yet yes. They're talking about nothing.
Exactly. It's a, right? It is perfect. Yes.
And it's captivating. And you're just, and you're like at the table with them. And then of course they get into like, you know, the Harvey Keitel and, you know, talking about what Steve Buscemi about not tipping and everything, you know, and then the one guy, and then Harvey Keitel's putting out like the statistics on what people at restaurants make and why you need a tip. And I mean, and he's just getting into this dialogue that you don't, no one even cares about, but right, yet you're right. you're just like gripped by it, you know, because of, you know, and I think you've said this in the past where Tarantino, just every breath is directed.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, every word and the dialogue is hanging on his direction of where the hands are placed and when they light the cigarette and how they're working it. And, you know, I mean, he's probably one of my favorites for sure.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, because when you watch his movies, I mean, you're so into, at least I get into like what, not only what the dialogue is, but the scenes are just, it's like they're slow enough, but they're fast enough. There's a lot going on, but yet it gives you time to digest it.
And you can chew this, you know, they talk about actors chewing the scenery, and that just means that they're like hamming it up and like really like acting and taking the breath and like being the character. But I think there's another definition of chewing the scenery where, you know, they hang on a shot, they hold on this, you know, master shot, and they show this, the cafe, or they show the bar. And the way that he has the scene play out is so slow that you have time to look around the frame and see what's going on and actually like breathe it all in. And that's another kind of chewing the scenery that is like, it's like, oh yeah, you know, if you're a production designer, you know, you spend a lot of time populating the scene and making a bar look just so, or making sure that, you know, the bar that you've gone to, you know, dressing it so it looks the part. And to have him spend the time on his framing and on this, on the shots to let it play out, is got to be, you know, as impactful to an actor getting to do a third take or to get into an extra actor's take, you know, it's got to be as impactful as that for a set set designer. And
oh yeah, I mean, and when you look at whether it's costume or it's somebody who's out doing like, I don't know, what do you call it, where people go to, I'm drawing a blank on what you'd call the person. They're the ones who go out like scouting the,
oh yeah.
You know, what is it?
Yeah, scouts. It's location scouting.
Yeah, location scouting. There you go. And they're doing location scouting. I mean, they're finding these places, these homes, restaurants, hotel lobbies, and whatever they're finding, because it has a unique layout or maybe some kind of art deco decor or whatever it might be. And yeah, there's a reason that they choose it. It's not by accident.
Right.
And to dismiss it with just, I mean, and you know how it is, right? They're going to sit there and shoot for a month, and then that whole month of photography and cinema photography that's going on and direction and so on is, you know, 16 seconds of a movie.
Exactly.
And it's just like, and somebody's worked so hard to set that all up, and it was just barely there, you know?
Somebody does a location scouting, then after they get the location, then they have the production designers come in, and they're like, all right, well, this is good, but let's, you know, plus this out. We want to have this theme. We're going over this. And then they plus it out. They put some stuff in. They, you know, they buy a bunch of stuff at Target and make it just right. And then, like you said, it's only a few shots on camera, and you're like, oh, well, we did all that work for this. And now, you know, when he lets the stuff play out, it is a love letter to all the people that were involved in making that.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So speaking of love letters, Between Two Ferns, the movie. So have you ever watched Between Two Ferns, like going back to whatever it was, 2009, 2010?
Yeah, my favorite Between Two Ferns was Obama.
Oh, how does it feel to be the last black president? Right?
Oh, I mean, Zach Galifianakis is a genius. And to give him this platform is amazing. And, you know, and then to just use it in the way that they used it was great. And I know we normally talk about the head, you know, the front end of these trailers, but I knew when Zach at the end says this is going to the theaters, and it was like, oh, it's not going to the theaters. Great. Yeah, you can see it wherever you see it. You know, like he's like making fun of Netflix and making fun of streaming services, but he's in a public access, you know, movie about a public access TV show. So it's genius.
But I mean, think about this though, man. This is the brilliance of how Netflix decided to go with the show. I mean, this thing came out, like I said, 2009, 2010, I believe. Uh-huh. And more or less, it was just like a YouTube kind of like before streaming was what streaming is today. And, you know, just it was just nonsense, right?
Right. Public access nonsense.
Yeah. That's on. I mean, I wouldn't even. I mean, would you say YouTube is like streaming? I mean, it sort of is. You know, it's just it's like video on demand.
I mean, at the time, YouTube was majority UGC, user generated content.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that means low production value. It means, you know, like, you know, me shooting a video and putting it up and then anybody can watch it. So it really embraces that kind of thing. And then it crosses it with the old public access, you know, television of yesteryear, you know?
And in 2014, 27,039,262 views of the Obama one. So if you think about it, in 2014, over 27 million views, right? Uh-huh. Not to mention all the other ones that have like 17 million and 10 million and all the, you know, whatever. So if you think about it, it was like, it's just as mainstream as anything on network television or HBO or any of the good stuff that you see. And then like now they capture this thing with all these, and even going back, like way back when he was doing this, you have all these like high-end actors, actresses on. And Netflix is like, you know, we're going to capture 100 million views for no other reason than just legacy.
Yeah.
I mean, like, they're going into this thing already knowing how much they're going to be banking as far as viewership goes.
Yeah.
It's like incredible. It's incredible that something that's like a 4-minute bit can garner so many views. And then when you watch it, like, it's the super dry humor that if you're not paying attention, you might miss something.
Yes.
But if it's a little bit too late, you'll definitely fall asleep because it moves so slow.
And yet the feature gives you a completely different feel, right? It's like a road comedy. You know, it's like a low budget road comedy.
It looks like it moves quick.
Yeah.
And he's going to the people he's going to interview. And it's almost like you're not even going to see the whole interview is kind of what I get the feel of.
Right.
You know, they're going to show snippets of him talking to people and it's going to be a little bit more like The Tonight Show. Mm-hmm. I think when it says when they're going through all the names and it says other celebrities. Yeah. The one guy they don't mention and he's got to be on it is Steve Carell.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Must.
He's got to be other celebrities.
Right.
I can only hope so. I mean, that would be disappointing if he wasn't there.
Right. Do you love the tape? I love how the lavs are all just taped on their shirts, like not even hidden.
That's how it's always been.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I, you know, it's just a detail that should not go unsaid.
And I'll have to say though, like you're watching it, and of course he's doing the flooding, whatever, with the drip of the pipes and all this.
Yes.
But when Matthew McConaughey, like when that enormous wave comes and takes him out, like I couldn't help but like I actually like laughed out loud.
Yes.
Because you're watching it and you're like, oh, okay. Because the whole thing is clever. And really, whether it's Brad Pitt or, I don't know, Michael Cera, which is one of the real early ones.
Yes.
No matter who you're watching, like you sit and you chuckle.
Yes.
Right? It's funny. It's a little bit uncomfortable. But you know, everybody's in on the gag. And when they give it back to him, sometimes it's funny. But then his response back, you chuckle.
Yes.
But when when Matthew McConaughey gets wiped out by that like massive amount of water, like, that was just hilarious.
And I think it lends itself to the idea of like, well, you're going to take something that was ultra low budget. You know, it was funny because it was kitschy. How are you going to plus it out so that it makes it feel like it's a movie? How can you make something that's 6 minutes long feel like it should be an hour and a half long?
I think he's got to stay dry with it.
And he's going to stay dry, but the activities, the scenarios that he's going to be placed in and be put around, they're going to be amazing and they're going to be like monumental. And it's like, I think of it similar to the South Park movie. Were you, were you a fan? Did you see South Park?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've seen it.
Bigger, longer, uncut. You know, I mean, it just plussed out everything about the TV show that was trying to justify it being a movie, you know? So I think that's what The Flood represents. That's what The Road Trip represents. You know, that's what Will Ferrell represents. It's like,
yeah,
it is everything, you know, that the life around Between Two Ferns would be.
And then where does this come out of? I mean, it was just his satire to make.
Yeah, it's...
I mean, I'm saying the original one.
The original one was Will Ferrell and I forget the other Funny or Die co-creator, but I'm sure it's their property.
Yeah, I mean, it just came out of just satire of like a Tonight Show kind of a thing where they were just going to like poke fun at like late night television and, you know, but with like top stars.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's just Funny or Die throwing spaghetti against the wall and seeing what works and seeing what doesn't and then just exploiting the funny things that worked, you know?
And it's so amazing though, because like the cleverness behind it and the caliber of Hollywood stars and just actors and celebrities and politicians and the people that they would get.
Yeah.
And it's like they come on for 5 minutes.
Yeah, no, it's great.
Like, how do you get someone to travel to wherever this thing was filmed for like 5 minutes? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, well, I don't know. You could do it wherever, you know, you could do that in the White House and it could, you know, with the black psych drop, you know, and two ferns.
Yeah, two ferns. That's all you need.
So, you know, it's not a big sell. You got to just fly Zach Galifianakis wherever you want to send him. So, you know, he flies.
Ted, you just wrote the movie.
He flies coach, you know, or
yeah, you just wrote the movie. Like, that's what he does. He goes and visits everybody on his road trip. What am I thinking? Who's coming to him, right?
Yeah.
You know what's hilarious, though? Like, if this is kind of a tongue-in-cheek documentary of, like, how the real one was actually done.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be awesome.
And then, but he just does it in a more humorous way with his travel and stuff. But, like, that it's probably not too far off from that. Very cool.
I swear I've seen Zach Galifianakis on the 101.
The 101. Did he have ferns in his car?
No ferns in his car.
Yeah.
But the sunglasses, yes.
So you're definitely going to watch this, though.
100%. I mean, like, yeah, you know, me too. Come on, it's streaming. What do we got to lose?
Hour and a half.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, 100%. I mean, you know, I could say with certainty I didn't watch all of the Funny or Die original ones.
Oh, no.
But I've seen a fair number of them. And when we get to what we're watching, if we could do that even now, maybe, I probably saw 10 tonight.
Good job.
Yeah, I spent about 45, you know, I just went down the Between Two Ferns rabbit hole. I got about, you know, they're all like 5 minutes each. So I'm like, I watched an hour's worth of Between Two Ferns. And then finally, Clarissa's like, yeah, dinner's ready. I'm like, man, I got to get away from this computer. It was like, man, talk about like a life suck with that thing. YouTube just keeps rolling through them.
Oh, man.
Once you hit one, like it just doesn't stop.
No, that's a YouTube death. So here's a YouTube hack for anybody out here who watches YouTube.
YouTube death.
Turn off the autoplay.
Right.
Because right. the autoplay is the crack that YouTube wants you to, you know, the crack pipe that YouTube wants you to suck on. Because I turned it off and then like I was on a new computer. I had to like wipe my cache or something. And I opened up Chrome and I was playing a YouTube clip and it played and then the next video played and I was like, oh, what's going on? I was like so shocked that the second video played and I realized because I cleared my cache, it hadn't logged me in. So I was like watching anonymously and when you watch anonymously, it kind of autoplays whatever. So I was like, oh yes, I must log in and turn off autoplay and do all my stuff because it is no bueno.
The funny thing about it, though, is you know, I'm watching, I don't even know what it was. There was something on one of the trailers that you sent me. Next thing you know, it's like Jimmy Kimmel or something in like Greenland. Yeah, or I don't even, it was, I'm like, what? How are they even picking this? What does this even have to do with anything, you know?
Sometimes the algorithm glitches a little bit and it's like, oh my God, he's doing Stravia. What are we going to do? We'll show him some Greenland something.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty intense, but.
All right. So what have you been watching this week? Since you're on this path already.
All right. Well, short week. So like I said, about hours worth ish, 50 minutes or so of the Funny or Die, Between Two Ferns. That was today. Finished up Chernobyl. And then since we recorded Monday and now it's Friday again. And you know, that's about it. It's too short of a week to get into anything substantial.
How many total episodes in Chernobyl?
It was five.
Five one-hour episodes?
Hour five, hour 10, something like that. I mean, it's short, though. I mean, you know, they're not like movie, they're not feature length.
Right.
So we finish, and it's pretty, like, heavy, right? I mean, people dying of, you know, radiation sickness and all. I mean, it was awful.
Awful.
You know, and then they give you the stats and, you know, it is what it is. And then you look at just the propaganda of communism and the Soviet Union and all this stuff. And you're just like shaking your head at it. So Clarissa's next comment was, I don't care what we watch, but whatever it is, it's got to be way lighter than this. Cause it was too heavy.
Enter Jeff Goldblum. You know
what I mean? Right. Yeah.
The palate cleanser to cleanse all palates.
Yeah, you know what? And that's a good point. Barry, in some way, is similar to like a Dexter.
Yes.
Okay, it is what it is. It's lighthearted at times. It's dark. There's comedic relief, you know, and all this sort of thing. But like, it's a little heavy, you know, when you have all these murders going on and stuff. So then like in between anything, it's like a couple episodes of Jeff Goldblum. And then you're back to like some other heavy thing. And then when you're done with that, like more Jeff Goldblum. And then you just like, and he's the guy that gives you the world is still sane.
He cleanses your palate.
Yeah. So how about you?
So I watched, I said, Anne, we want to watch something together. Let's watch Carnival Row, right? So I had told you.
Carnival Row.
Last week that I was going to try to get Anne to watch Carnival Row. Carnival Row is Orlando Bloom and Claire Deneuve or something like that. And it's on Amazon Prime and it's a season of turn of the century 1900s kind of, but it's a fairy world, but it's as if fairies lived in England and there are like ram people and centaurs and all kinds of weird mythical beasts. But imagine if fairies were hookers and in a brothel and kind of oppressed people. And it's kind of trying to make a commentary on immigration and all that, all the negative stereotyping that we have, but in a fantasy light. But I turn on the episode and even before I get to the episode, the trailer plays. Anne's over it. She's like, nope, not gonna watch this. It's way too dark, way too violent. You know, it shows like fairies dead on like barbed wire that the army has put over the, so that the fairies can't fly out of the forest. So they kind of made a basket. They made like a layer of barbed wire that the fairies can't fly above. So in 2 minutes, Anne's out of that. So she's not willing to watch that. So I said, oh, let's find something. So I'm like, I'll look for a rom-com, do something like that. And I found Destination Wedding. Destination Wedding was, I don't know if we did this trailer, but we might have done this trailer. It's Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder.
Doesn't sound familiar.
Okay. Well, since you're a Quentin Tarantino fan, I would like you and Clarissa to give this 15 minutes. So it's a typical movie, an hour and a half movie. But if you give it 15 or 20 minutes, you will decide whether you want to invest the whole hour. Don't give it 15, 20 minutes and then say like, ooh, it's going to be something different. You know, an hour in, an hour and a half, by the end, it's going to change. Whatever you feel or however you feel about it in the first 20 minutes, if you don't like it, then you can stop watching because it's not going to do anything else. But I was so intrigued by the format and the way that this film played out. It basically just takes a pair of strangers that are people that you, if you met in real life, would hate and it puts them into a situation of a destination wedding where they are forced to interact with each other. And then it records their conversations in a way that is voyeuristic. And this voyeuristic conversations of bickering people that you hate kind of becomes the cafe scene that you were talking about earlier in Reservoir Dogs. And it's like, and it plays out, some of the scenes play out in the distance where you could be watching it from across the street, and it plays out in this two person master shot, but they're like really tiny on the screen and they're far away, but they're yelling at each other and they're kind of bickering about nothing. And then you're just like, oh, these two people hate each other so much just by the thought of each other. And then it just plays out over the whole movie like this. And that's all it ever is. It's never, they never introduce other characters. They don't do anything. It's like Waiting for Godot, but it, with this destination wedding as the overlay to it. So it was an amazing movie. I gave it 4.5 stars out of 5 stars. I gave it a
wow,
an awesome Letterboxd review, and I loved it. And kind of the icing on the cake was, Anne was excited to see it at the beginning of it. But the minute it took this bickering turn, she had turned off on it a little bit, but not turned off in a way where she was like checked out, but turned off in a way where it wasn't as she expected. And yet, me knowing it was a rom-com, I was ready to suffer through a rom-com. And then when it turned out to be like the anti-rom-com, I was like, oh, this is genius. This is brilliant. This is
okay,
awesome.
Now you got me. And it's on Prime, you said?
It's on something. I don't know.
We can find it. I'll search it and we'll find it. You know, it's on one of those things.
It's either Netflix, Prime, or Hulu. So if it's on Hulu, I think you're out. But I don't think I checked it on Hulu. So it's either on Prime or on Netflix. So Keanu Reeves is Keanu Reeves. Winona Ryder is Winona Ryder. You know, what else do you need? They're given the palette. They paint.
I like that metaphor.
How about you? Oh yeah, you already said I finished my beer, so I will.
Yeah.
Say,
wow. All 32 ounces of
32
it, huh?
32 ounces down in an hour and 11 minutes, but I finished it about a little 10 minutes ago, so.
Oh, man, this guy, like, you slammed it. You slammed it. All right, man, I guess that's it, man. We covered a lot tonight, especially Aberration. Ted's 2005 just out of film school film.
If we ever watch the trailer for that, maybe we'll do that next week.
That'd be brilliant.
We did not cut that trailer, so I will let you know. The people that bought it and packaged it as a different movie cut the trailer. But, you know, it's a typical horror trailer flick, and I have more stories for it, so we could totally talk about it.
And I'll say, though, I did watch a few, like, about half the trailer while we were talking. And it was one of the jump cuts, man. I actually jumped. It was, like, scary.
Oh, good. Good.
So really quick, though, so you guys sold it to like an entertainment company or something, or production company, or?
So there's a lot of ways to sell the movie. So when we got it cut and we got it mixed and, you know, all the final processing parts of it, Doug took it to AFM, which is called the American Film Market. And that's where you sell it to different countries. And a few countries bought it, but no one bought it domestically. So it kind of sat on the shelf for a couple of years. I think he recouped some money from that initial sale. And then 2 years later, so we filmed it in 2005. In 2007, there is a company that takes horror movies and packages them up. And I think they were buying a bunch of horror movies and they bought this and they changed the title of it. They recut the trailer and they took the film and they sold it. They had a relationship with Amazon Prime and they sold it to Prime and they pressed a bunch of DVDs and they put it out there.
And then what was the original title?
So the original title in 2005 was called The Dreamer, because the lead character was Wendy, who was also the writer, and she would dream about this dead boy and who killed him and who killed all the people in this small town. So we had The Dreamer. And at that same time, there was a Dakota Fanning movie about a horse called The Dreamer made by Fox. And Fox actually sent us a cease and desist letter saying, change the title of your movie. And I wrote them back and I said, well, you know, we put some marketing into the naming of this film, so I would appreciate a check for about $5,000 to change our title. And they said, no, just change your title. You know, we're not going to give you any money. And I was like, okay. So then we changed the movie to Afterthought, and then we sold it.
How did they catch wind of your title?
Well, you know, it's out there in the zeitgeist. It's out there, you know, in the market. So we were trying to.
Oh, I see.
We were trying to sell it. So yeah. So they we changed it to Afterthought, and then when the company bought it, they changed it to Aberration.
Got it. Got it. Well, we'll pick that up again at some point in the future.
Cool.
And yeah, I'd like to hear more about it though. Man, that sounds really cool.
Awesome.
All right, Ted. Well, let's get out of here, and then we'll get this thing out and rocking and rolling.
Have a good night.
All right, man. You too.
All right. Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.